Hey, this is Brett Kaiser from Madam X, and you're listening to Power Rock Podcast with your host, Jim Madonna, rocking out.
Donna here, your host of Horror Rock Podcast. I would like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream. And friends, today's show is going to rock, because I have on the line the amazing Mr. Brett Kaiser of Madam X. Brett, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me, man. This is an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
And, Brett, I must say, it's truly an honor for me, my friend. I mean, I have listened to Madam X for quite a while, man, and I am so honored to have this opportunity to speak with you, man. And it's just, this is just killer, brother.
Hey, no problem. And when you say quite a while, man, you really mean it.
Well, you know, we're not getting any younger, brother.
Oh, man, you know, we're getting better with age. That's what it is. You know, Madam X has been cryogenically sealed for about 30 years. So, you know, we're just out now. So with a new record. And back in 19, you know, we got together. I think it was I joined Madam X. It was 1982. My band, Long Island, I was living in Long Island, New York. And my band was playing at a club called Hammerheads back on Long Island, and we opened up for this band that came from Detroit called Madam X. And the band was fantastic. I mean, they had the big PA, big looking, big lights and everything, but their singer was so weak. You know, so after the show, I said to them, I go, hey, if you ever need a lead singer, give me a call. So they did. About a couple weeks later, I got a call and moved my butt up to Darien, Connecticut. We had a band house up there, and we started rehearsing. So we decided, you know, that it worked. The chemistry was there. The girls were unbelievable. When I seen them, I couldn't believe it. You know, the unbelievable talent that the band had. You know, I never seen and I hate to say this, and they'll probably hate me for saying it, but I never seen a girl play drums and guitar like that before, you know. And they're all going to hate me now because, you know, there's so many of them. But they're all going to hate me for saying that, but man, they kicked bigger ass than most guys that I knew.
What's it like playing with females? I mean, you know, I mean, of course, not only amazing ladies musically, but they're beautiful ladies. So what exactly is that like, man? I mean,
I don't know how long you walked around with an erection. No, did I say that? Anyway, you know, it be like a family. You know what I mean? We rock every night of the week, six nights a week, four or five sets a night, honing our craft. Where there, you know, there's stuff that we're going to keep for the book, but you know, it, and you become overprotective of them. You know, that's a natural male thing, you know, cause, some of our crowds just got so rowdy and crazy and stuff. You know, we had guys pulling their stuff out, their junk out and laying it on the stage and stuff, you know, and then you'd have girls doing the same thing for the guys, you know. And then, of course, you'd have girls and guys running away from Godzilla because, you know, he was just a monster himself. But, you know, so it was we had everything that everybody wanted. You know what I mean? We had two girls and two guys in the band that could play, really play and rock. And we came into town with a big semi full of gear, big lights, big sound, big hair, you know, and we just conquered. And that was our whole plan. You know, our whole plan was to, from 1982 to 84, we played the whole scene from New York all the way to Arizona and back like three times, four times with 10 days off each year for Christmas. And finally we said, okay, we got our original set down. Let's go get a record deal. So, you know, we all looked at each other and said, yeah, hey, great idea. Let's go to LA and get a record deal. So we went to LA to play three shows set up. The first one was at Madam Wong's West, I believe it was. After knocking down their wall with the semi, we did a little set there, and we had a couple of people in the audience. You know, not a big crowd, but there was one lady in there. I think her name was Lucy Forbes. She said, you guys are amazing. You know what? I want to take you to the Rainbow. And we were like, okay. let us change. She goes, no, no, don't change. So we went to the Rainbow in our stage gear. So we walk into the Rainbow and our hair is up, you know, the makeup, the leather on and everything. And I, it was like E.F. Hutton spoke, you know, everybody just stopped and looked. We were like, okay, well, so we got a booth and, you know, we're looking around and we see Blackie there, you know, Blackie Lawless and everybody, and everybody's coming up to the table saying, hey, man. And in the crowd at the Rainbow was Robert Street, who worked for Jet Records, CBS Records. He worked for Don Arden. And he was like, man, who are you guys? So we happen, of course, have a package on us, and we gave him a package, and we go about our thing. You know, and we told him we have a show at the Troubadour, and he gave us a call the next day and said, I need, like, I don't know, 8 tickets. He's bringing the whole crowd. So we went, and the next gig was at the Troubadour, and we played, and Don Arden was in the crowd and came up to us afterwards and said, you know, my greatest find in 5 years, you know. And he was just so enthusiastic and over the top, loved us, signed us. We signed him. You know, we're new babies in the business, you know what I mean? I mean, basically. To this, we said, yeah. So we signed the deal, you know, and we thought, hey, you know, our troubles are over. We're signed. We did it.
You know what? I want to take it back a little bit. What was the most defining moment in your life that you decided that you wanted to be a rock and roll singer?
Well, it all started way back in 1976. You know, I watched my little brother, my younger brother, in junior high school play in a band at a talent show. And it was just two guitar players and a drummer play. And I seen all these girls react to it. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So sibling rivalry takes over. And I, you know, my brother asked me, how'd you like the band? I said, well, you guys were great, man, but you need a bass player. So he goes, well, why don't you learn how to play bass and join the band? So I said, sure. So I taught myself how to play the bass and I joined the band. And in 1977, in August, Elvis Presley passed away, you know, and I've always been a big Elvis fan. And I decided then that I wanted to be the singer now. I don't want to be a bass player anymore. I just bought a brand new Rickenbacker Fire Glow 4001. And I said, you know what? I don't want this thing hanging around my neck. I want to be the singer. I want to move around, you know, and I want to do what I can. And I want to be the next, you know, Elvis. I want to be the king of rock and roll. You know what I mean? I want to be a rock star. And that was the moment when I decided to be a singer. And just started from them, 1977, you know, and rock and rolled around New York, and had a tri-state area band put together, and we played on. And then, like I said, we met Madame X, and the rest is history.
There's a track I want to talk about, man, and the name of this track is called She's Hot Tonight. Now, this is probably pretty much a self-explanatory song, but why don't you go ahead and give the listener some history about that track?
Honestly, it was just came into my head. You know, when I write songs, I hear the drums and I hear the bass and then I hear this guitar. And She's Hot Tonight just came about being a rock singer. You go to town to town to town and you see massive amounts of women. And it's just about a girl that caught my eye. And, you know, she was a hot chick and I wrote the song She's Hot Tonight. Think about it. You're a rock singer, but the girls have the, you know, they catch you. You catch them and they're, you know, they actually catch you.
Right on, man. Well, I'm going to tell you what, Brett. Let's go ahead and let the listeners hear She's Hot Tonight with Madame X. Crank it up.
Yeah.
Welcome back. We are with Brett Kaiser. What a great song, man. Well written, well produced, just overall great stuff, my friend.
Oh, thank you. That, you know, it was a blast doing the record. That the for our first record, we reserved the right. I think we did it in 30 days, you know, if that. You know, Don Arden said, hey, I want you guys to write some cute songs, hits, you know, whatever. And, you know, High in High School, your High in High School was the first single off the record. And then we reserved the right, which is the name of the album, to rock. And we did the video, the first video, Your High in High School. The same people who did Quiet Riot's videos were the production company. So we had little people. I don't know if that's politically correct, but we had this one guy. We had a casting call for dwarfs or little people, whatever. Little people, I guess that's what they want to be called. And so we had about 50 of them show up with their resumes. And so we had to read these resumes. So we picked the guy who was an Ewok in Star Wars. And he's the little guy that's running around on stage and stuff like that. And I had to catch him at the end. Sucker was heavy. I got to tell you, team take, you know, because when you do a video, you do it like 50 times.
Right.
You know, so about the seventh, he was so heavy, I dropped him, you know. And he was a good sport about it, you know. Mm. But it was a lot of fun. And we reserved the right. We shot at Rod Stewart's restaurant, La Dome, out on the Sunset Strip, you know. And he let us use his restaurant for this video shoot. It was fantastic. We had a great time. During that production, Roxy's hair caught on fire. Actually, before Michael Jackson.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't really bad as Michael was because, you know, we didn't have the money to publicize it like that. So, it got a little spark from one of the bombs, you know, one of the flash pots, put it out right away, and she didn't get hurt or anything. So we continued on, but interesting, you know, I mean, it's just doing that whole recording of the record. Rick Derringer produced it. George Tutko, you know, God rest his soul. We lost him a couple of years ago. You know, it was such a learning thing. Being in the studio is so different from being live. You know, we were a live band. I've never been in the studio before that. So, you know, I just sat and listened and learned, and we did what we had to do. You know, I mean, we stayed at the studio. We did it at Cherokee Studios in L.A. and had a lot of special guests show up and watch the band because they heard about it. Dokken was recording in the next studio over. Robin Zander came in, you know, Ted Nugent. All these people coming to see it. Whenever we did a show, it was like a star-studded thing, you know, because everybody couldn't believe these girls, you know. So, like, Tommy Aldridge. I remember turning around at the country club. We were playing the country club. I remember turning around, and I'm seeing Tommy Aldridge, Tommy Lee, you know, Ted Nugent, Blackie, all these guys coming to see the show, you know. And they were just like, ah, wow, man, hey, you guys are great, you know. It was fantastic. The 80s, they were nothing like it was nothing like.
I totally agree, brother. What do you think, if you could go back, what would be one of your most memorable live shows?
Well, you know what, Madame X, whenever we played, we did a tour through Texas. We used to play through Texas all the time, no matter where, the Cardi's chain, and they were always packed. I mean, the crowds were phenomenal. I remember playing in San Antonio once, and, you know, being kind of naive, you know, I mean, believe it or not, I didn't have a lot of worldly experience at the time. You know, I just got into this band and we went on the road. So we're playing in San Antonio to a packed house, and the crowd was kind of slow getting into it. I mistakenly said the wrong word. I called it, you know, I said, what are you guys, a bunch of, and I said a slang word, you know, and my roadie ran out and he goes, what are you doing, man? I go, what? Because when I said it, everybody stopped. But I guess I could say it. I mean, I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't know what the word meant, but I said, you know, you guys, what are you guys, a bunch of wetbacks? I had no idea. Seriously. And I, with my hand over my heart, I didn't mean nothing by it, because I always thought it meant you're being wimpy. You know what I mean?
Right.
In New York, I thought it meant wimpy. So he goes, no, you did. You just cursed. So I explained myself, and I said, and I know San Antonio ain't wimpy. And the crowd just erupted and loved us, you know. And I was like, woo, by the grace of God, oh, my God. You know, I mean, thank the Lord, you know, woo, we got through that. There were always at a Madame X show, there's always something big happen. You know what I mean? We've had guys, like I said, put their junk out on the stage, you know, hey, look at this, to the girls, you know, Maxine would try to go over and step on it or something, you know, because, I mean, really, you know, the chicks flashing and stuff like that. It was always a, we had a girl follow us in her car. This was funny. We played in Dallas and we had a bus. So we played in Dallas and we went to Fort Worth, which isn't that far. This chick followed us in her DeLorean, and on the DeLorean, her license plate was Madame X.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty wild, man. You know, stuff like that, you know, and we would get drawings and stuff from people all the time. And it was just an amazing, amazing time. You know, I have no regret, you know, except maybe get a different lawyer back when we signed the deal, you know. I mean, seriously, when we got signed, we thought, oh, this is it. But, you know, we were youngsters. What did we know? And I'm sure that any band out there can identify with this that maybe went through it. Always get a lawyer and have him look at the deal and make sure he's not hired by the manager.
You hear a lot of that stuff on the internet today, and of a lot of stuff going bad, and it's really off the hook, man.
Yeah, well, it was, because all of a sudden, you know, we go to the UK. Madame X went to the UK, which was phenomenal. We played the UK. We did the Marquee Theater, and it was sold out in half an hour, and they had to turn like 500 kids away. And that the streets were all packed with kids. I had black and white hair at the time. So we would go out during the day going shopping, and there'd be kids, people following you, asking for autographs, taking your picture while you're eating. It was fabulous. I mean, this was like, oh my God, this is a dream come true. And it was, it really was. Then we were supposed to play the Dominion Theater, and the promoters were worried about advanced ticket sales. Well, nobody buys advanced ticket sales back then, you know, because they live day to day. There's no doubt in my mind it would have been a sold out show. So the record company, Don and everybody, came up with this thing that I had a bereavement in my family, that I lost my sister, which I didn't have a sister. I never had a sister. But this is what they came up with and sent us back to the United States.
Wow.
You know, so, yeah. And, you know, we were doing so good. You know, we were ready to do this tour, and people loved it. So we, next thing I know, we're back in the U.S. They sent us to Canada to do some shows. We played up in Canada, up in Toronto. I happened to befriend a youngster up there. He was about 18 at the time, maybe, and loved the band. His name was Sebastian, and we became friends. So later on, that's a whole nother story. But after Canada, we went back to LA, and we're sitting around going, what the heck's going on? Well, the label folded. And I said, well, you know what? I can't stand just sitting here. There were eight of us in a two-bedroom apartment, you know, four band members, four crew members. We're like, what are we doing? You know, we sat, we've been trying to write songs. But, you know, you get creative people in one small area for too long, man, you're just asking for trouble. You know what I'm saying? For somebody to say the wrong thing. So instead, I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to New York for a little while, you know, and I left and I went back to New York. Meanwhile, at this time, Roxy was being pursued by Vixen. So she decided to give that a try. And Maxine and Chris, like I said, kept going. They had a couple of singers, one of which who was Sebastian Bach, you know, the kid I met in Canada. He happened to get the gig. He was with them for about 6-7 months or whatever it was. And then he got the gig in Skid Row. Now, funny thing about it is I got a cassette tape and demo tape and lyric sheets from a band called Skid Row when I went back to New York. And I was like, I don't feel like going to Jersey. I said, no, man, I'm back in New York. And you know what? I'm just going to play with my brother. And, you know, they had great tunes, you know, but I don't feel like relocating again to Jersey and stuff. And I said, you know, there's this youngster in Madame X you should check out. But meanwhile, I guess they were invited to Mark Weiss's wedding. You know, Chris and Maxine took Sebastian there, and they met Sebastian, and the rest is history, you know. Because you know what? I look at it this way. Things happen for a reason, because they're supposed to happen that way. I wasn't supposed to be in Skid Row. It wasn't meant to be. It was meant for Sebastian to be a rock star at that, and for him to get in. I have no regrets out of any decision I've ever made in my life, you know, because I don't look at the stuff behind me. I just look forward. You know what I mean?
Right on, man.
I've always loved that quote that David Lee Roth said, the rear view mirror in your car ain't for looking for what's behind you. It's for looking how cool you look getting where you're going.
I love that, man. I've never heard that.
That's, I think he said that. Cool. If he didn't, I did.
let me ask you this. In your opinion, what defines a successful record?
A successful record to me is when everybody that does the record is happy with what they've done. To me, that's successful. Of course, going quadruple platinum would be defined as successful, you know, making money, which is almost impossible these days now. You know that. You know it as well as I do. The record business, they ain't what it used to be.
Absolutely.
So to me, Monstrosity, we all worked so hard on this record. Look, it took 30 years. Actually, okay, so anyway, what happened is, you know, we all went our separate way. Haven't heard from anybody in years. You know, I did my thing. I started my band Kaiser back up. I moved to Arizona. We played here in Arizona for a long time. We got a sponsorship from Bud Light, changed the name to the Bowery Boys. We're playing. I found out I'm going to be a dad, so I stopped playing music because I wanted to be part of my son's life. I didn't want to be an on-the-road dad, send me pictures of my kid growing up. So I decided then that I was going to stop, and that was 1994 when my son was born. Problem was, okay, what am I going to do? So I started working for the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office in early 1995, to raise my son. So I've been there ever since. My son is now 23. I have 23 years in with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. I have 2 years and 6 months to go before I have my 25 years, and I can retire from there with a pension. In the meantime, during this time growing up, when my about 2000 and two or one or five, something like that, I got married in 2005 to my wife, my sweetheart, who I met back in 1982 or 84 playing at Rockers in Phoenix. You know, that's when I first met her. But we got married in 2005. And she had a little girl. I had a little boy. She had a female dog. I had a male dog. It was like the Brady Bunch. You know, we came together and blended family. And it's been heaven since. And my wife has been my kind of manager, guiding me, so I don't make the same mistakes again.
Thank God for our wives, man, because, right? Wow.
I'm serious. She's the brains behind this business. She really is. She's very smart. She's she does commercial real estate, property manager for about 1 million square feet of commercial real estate. And she's got a great career and stuff. And we have a business now, you know, our business, Impoverished Royalty. And, you know, on the meantime, while I've been working at the sheriff's office, since I was such a big Elvis fan, I started doing a tribute to Elvis. So I would start doing Elvis shows, and I became an ETA, you know, an Elvis tribute artist. So I have been doing that, and I missed playing with, you know, I've been doing singing live to track and with the show, the jumpsuits, the whole thing. And at first, when I first started, I wore a wig and I glued the sideburns on, but then I, you know, with the sheriff's office, that you can't go to work like that. So I just started dyeing my hair, straightening it, and I have it styled like Elvis's, and you know, I got pretty successful with that. So out of the blue, I guess, meanwhile, if we had that thing like meanwhile back in Detroit, well, Roxy was playing in Vixen. You know, she had a successful career in Vixen, she still does, and she was playing in England at Firefest. Well, a lot of memorabilia was coming across the table, Madame X memorabilia, you know. And so she talked to her sister, Maxine, and said, hey, you know what? We should do something for the fans. Now, mind you, all during this time, we've all been getting hits on our computers and stuff, Facebook and you know, MySpace and all these people. Hey, are we ever going to get Madame X back together again? Are we ever going to get, you know, see Madame X play? Because you know as well as I do, a lot of these bands that are out there, you know, there's one or two maybe original members in it, stuff like that, you know, and there's a couple that had all the original members will come back. Well, they called me and said, do you want to do something for the fans? I said, sure. I said, I'd love to do something, you know, but we got to get Chris and have it all original. So we did. And Chris came up with the song, another 80s rock song. And he, you know, he wrote that. We recorded it and it was cool. And then all of a sudden, we got a call. Maxine gets a call from Sweden Rock, you know, the Sweden Rock Festival people, and saying, hey, is this the original members of the band? And she said, yes, it is. And they said, we want you on the Sweden Rock show in 2014. And she was like, really? And they're like, yeah. So they made us an offer. We made a counteroffer. They said yes. And off we went to Sweden. Unbelievable rock and rock fest. I mean, Sweden Rock Fest is like the biggest European festival. And it was amazing. It was like we never stopped playing. When we flew into Copenhagen, there were kids at the airport that printed out their own posters of Madame X that wanted it signed. Now, me being the New Yorker I am, I'm looking around for video cameras going, this is staged, right? You know, where are the cameras? Are you serious? You know, but it blew me away. The kids came from Poland to Sweden Rock, and they said, Madame X, our favorite, you know, and we're signing, you know, at the airport. You know, and so we did the show. We were on the last day of the festival. Now, mind you, you know, this show, Black Sabbath with Ozzy, Alice Cooper, Volbeat, Queensryche, you know, everybody, friends from New York, Danger, you know, all these bands. It was just like we were living a dream. You know, I got to tell you, for 2 weeks, I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, it was a 4-day thing. We got the last day of the festival, Saturday at 12:45 in the afternoon. Okay. So Sweden Rock comes up to us, the people, and they go, look, we don't want you to be disappointed if it's not a big crowd. It's the last day of the festival. We're like, hey, you know, we're just happy to be here. You know what I mean? We're amazed that you wanted us here and people have been so cool to us, because the, you know, the first 3 days, everybody was coming up to us. Can we take our picture? Can we have an autograph? You know, Madame X number one, you know, they had the record. They had the record on CD. Now, mind you, We Reserve the Right came out in 1984. There were no CDs, okay? They were just vinyl. So somebody printed Madame X, We Reserve the Right on CDs, and the guy in Sweden goes, I don't think you realize how big you are here. I'm like, I guess not. Because when we went on, there was 13,000 people in front of the stage on a Saturday afternoon, 12:45, last day of the festival. And they knew all the words to the song. And I knew this because I sang the wrong line in your high and high school. And the guy looks at me and he shakes his head. And I'm like, oh, well, you know. But the crowd was amazing. We played an hour. And it was the quickest hour of my life. I mean, but I got to tell you, as soon as I hit that stage, the energy from most people, it was phenomenal. It was a feeling I haven't had, you know. So after the show, we all sat around and we were looking at each other going, we got to keep doing this. It's too magical not to keep this going. So that 2014 Sweden Rock, that crowd, that show was the moment we decided to keep Madame X going. So that was the start of.
That's very cool, man.
We decided to write for Monstrosity.
You know, you brought up the tune, another 80s rock song. Just a moment ago. How about ahead and give the listeners, some history about how that song came about?
Well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with another 80s rock song. Chris wrote the song, and it's a perfect introduction to Madame X coming back. That's why he wrote it. You know, we were releasing it as the first single, you know, off of this record that we were going to do. All we were going to do was this single, you know? So we put this single out and see what would happen. People ate it up, and you know, when we got there to Sweden, everybody knew the words to the song. And it's just, when you hear the song, you'll know what I mean, because it's like you know, Ain't Nothing Wrong with Another 80s Rock Song. And it's perfect. It was a perfect song for Madam X to be reintroduced to everybody.
Tell you what, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Another 80s Rock Song with Madam X. Crank it up. Brett, let me ask you this, man. I know you talked about you had there was a point in your life where you had a child and you kind of had to, you know, kind of back away from things to raise your child. My question to you is this: has there ever been a point in your life where you had lost the interest in performing? And if so, what did you do to rekindle it?
Well, you know, you never quite lose it, you know. I had to put it on the back burner because here is this young baby, you know, that I had to raise now, you know, and for the first time really felt unconditional love, you know, like what my parents felt for me, you know what I mean? So I had to do whatever it took to make sure that I had a job, benefits, that this young boy was going to grow up with me there. You know, when I was 5 years old, my dad was killed in New York City. So I was raised without a dad. My mom did a great job, me and my younger brother, until she remarried when I was 12 or something like that. But, you know, I was going to raise my son and give him everything that I didn't get. After that, I've always, the job that I decided on taking, being a detention officer in the jails, I'm actually performing. It's a people job. You know, I have a captive audience, if you know what I mean, because I work in a jail. So they're captive and they have to listen to me and tell they have to do what I say. But being that I was a lead singer, you know, I love people, you know, so I don't approach the job like, you know, badge heavy or, you know, a good guy, bad guy thing. People do unfortunate things. You know, some of them stupid, some of them unfortunate. But I don't judge people on what they do. I judge people on how they act towards me. And my whole philosophy with this job has been since day one, I'm going to treat people the way I want to be treated. And I've never had a problem, ever. I've got stories upon stories of stuff that's happened, you know. And to be honest with you, we put together, Sheriff Joe and I, you know, and we put together Inmate Idol, you know, music. Because, you know, at the time, you know, I started getting back into doing the Elvis shows. You know, the sheriff would come and see my shows and he'd come up and sing My Way with me. But, well, try anyway. We put together this contest, you know, where I had to sit with like at least 270 inmates trying to sing. So I got a real respect for Simon, Paula, and Randy at the time, because, you know, that's when American Idol came out. This was 2007. So the thing got worldwide publicity. And the funny thing about it is I got a call from after the contest. You know, I was a judge as Elvis. We had Alice Cooper, a judge, and the sheriff was a judge. So we dwindled it down to 10 inmates, you know, that sang and performed. And one guy won and had a chance at a record deal. So it was a really cool thing to do. Well, a week later, after the thing, Joshua Behrman wrote a story in the LA Weekly about it. Well, I get a phone call, and it's, you know, somebody named David Klawans calls me and asks me if he'd like to do a movie about my character. And I'm like, again, being the New Yorker that I am, I thought it was one of my friends. So I'm like, who the f*** is this? You know, and so I told my wife, I go, look up David Klawans. Well, Mr. Klawans, David produced Nacho Libre, Coach Carter, Wild Hogs. You know, he looks for interesting stories and makes movies about them. So he told me, he goes, well, who wouldn't want to make it? Look, you're a heavy metal singer, turned detention officer, puts together a singing contest to quell violence in the jails, and you moonlight as Elvis. He goes, how could that not be a movie? Okay, sure. So he sent me a life rights contract. I signed it. They were going to make a movie starting in 2007. Here we are in 17. They're still interested about it, but, you know, it takes a long time, I guess. He told me some movies took 11 years, and I'm like, well, you know what? Jeez. I said, can you make this thing quick? You know, my parents are still here. You know, my mom and my dad, I'd like them to see something.
Right.
But it's about my character. It's not about an autobiography. You know, it's just my character. And the funny thing is, Disney picked it up at first, but then Disney got busy with their pirate movies and their animation stuff. So they're still shopping it to try to find a home. They had a director, Brian Robbins, who did Wild Hogs, Norbit, Dave, you know, stuff like he does Smallville. You know, he's a director of Smallville and stuff. And he calls me and we keep in touch and just hoping that the movie gets made. It was going to be called Jailhouse. The working title was Jailhouse Rock 2007 back then. Now, I don't know. Nobody ever approached me before with that. So there's another thing that was like, wow, that was so cool. Because I've got stories, you know, in the jails. Actually, they came here and I took, you know, we went to lunch at Cooperstown. And I told them some of the stories, and they're all laughing. And I said, well, who are you going to get to play me? You know, so they go, well, who do you want to play? I said, well, me. And they said, no, well, we've been talking to some names like Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell, or Jack Black. And I was like, is this a comedy? Going, you're kidding, right? He goes, the stories you told me, of course it's a comedy. I said, whatever. You know, that's cool. So if it gets made, I'll be happy. You know, but just the experience of meeting them and somebody actually wanting to do that makes me feel that I was doing the right thing. So I started performing again, doing the Elvis stuff. then I missed a band. So I put together this band called 56, which is early 1950s, because I loved early 50s rock. You know, just a guitar, upright bass, drummer, and a singer. You know, just like when Elvis started. You know, though he started without a drummer. It was just a guitar, upright bass, and him. I put together this band 56, and we were doing rockabilly, you know, and it was such fun. And actually, we made a CD, and it's a great band. And this was all happening before Madame X got back together and stuff. So I still do that. You know, we still play. We've been writing, and I've been, you know, the hard part about the Monstrosity record with Madame X is the distance between. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. The band lives in Detroit, you know, in Michigan. So we'd be writing, sending tracks to each other, saying, oh, yeah, that sounds good. And then I'd be sending songs to them, and they, you know, they record their part, and then I'd record the vocals here, you know, and stuff like that. And then I'd fly to Detroit every once in a while and tighten them up and stuff. And then finally, we got an offer after Sweden Rock to do the Monsters of Rock cruise in 2016. So we did that. And on the boat, Michael Wagner was there. So Michael Wagner is mixing the record. He mixed all of the songs on the record, but three of them. Because we got Mark Slaughter, who's going to mix the last three songs. And, you know, that should be finished any day now. And then we got, like I said, we shopped around, you know, and we've had some offers, but nothing that really excited us until, you know, we got an offer from EMP, which is Ellefson's label, and Tom Hazard, a great guy, you know, and it's just, we're very excited about it. We can't wait to get this out there. Because it's been a labor of love. Doubt, though, it's going to blow people's mind because the material on it is, it's heavy, and there are commercial songs, and there's even a ballad on the record, you know, which we've never did before. And it's just great. The girls stepped up. Great songwriting. You know, we've all pitched it. Everybody's writing. You know what I mean? They're all written by Madame X.
Let me ask you this, brother. What piece of musical advice forever changed your way of thinking?
You know, I really don't consider myself a musician, to be honest with you. I'm an entertainer. You know what I mean? I entertain. I could play guitar. You know, I fiddle around on the drum, guitar, bass, and stuff like that. But I taught myself how to play. I don't read music stuff. I feel it. I feel it, and I put it out there. You know what? If you are genuine and you feel what you do, and you're honest, and you put 150% into what you do, you will be successful. And that's, you know, my mother told me, do you love what you do? I said, yes. She said, then do it.
Right on, man.
And, you know, and I've been doing it. And to me, I'm successful, you know.
Next track I want to talk about is called Metal in Your Veins. How about some history on that one?
Metal in My Veins. Okay, you know, when we did We Reserve the Right, You're High in High School, stuff like that, people say, oh, it's about drugs. It's not about drugs. At that time, we were saying, you know, if you listen to the words, you're high in high school, we're like, you shouldn't be high in high school. But now, you know, these days, whatever, everybody thinks other things. Metal in My Veins was, at the time, there was so many different genres of music that people were doing, you know. It was rock, and it became glam metal, then metal, and thrash metal and stuff. Well, you know, to us, we were just metal, and we had it in our veins. It runs through our veins. You know, it just, a lot of people say, well, did you mean like hypodermic needles in your veins? Like, no, man, I meant music. You know, I got music, metal in my vein. And that's what the song, you know, it's just a rock song. You know, and it moves, and it's a great tune.
It is a great tune. And here it is, man. Metal in My Veins with Madame X. Crank it up.
Everybody.
back with Mr. Brett Kaiser, man. And Brett, what's one piece of advice that you would give yourself 20 years ago?
Get a real good entertainment lawyer. probably that, or pay more attention to this one particular girl.
Okay.
Who later on I married.
What do you think will be the next evolution in the music industry?
Oh, Lord. You know, music, it goes around and comes around. You know what I mean? I'm hoping that, you know, I don't understand a lot of the stuff that's out. I got to be honest with you. I don't understand how these massive crowds flock to DJs. You know, nothing against DJs, but it's not a live show. I mean, you know, a lot of lights and that beat, you know, the heartbeat. And kids today, it's probably just like our parents said, you know, I don't understand what you see in this music. And, you know, and back in the 50s with, oh, don't you watch that, you know, film him from the waist up. Kind of, you know, music, whatever it is, I just hope they're honest about it and they put on a good show. And, you know, being a father now, stuff like that, my son likes different stuff that I like. You know, that first time he seen my video, he was like, oh, my God,
what is that?
But I don't, you know, that's the whole idea with music, is be original, you know, come up with your own thing. You know, nobody ever got anywhere being somebody else. You know, like, you know, I do a tribute to Elvis. Yeah, but I do it because I love Elvis. I don't do it in contests. I don't think I'm, you know, I mean, I do it because it's fun and I love singing Elvis. But you want to be somebody, you got to be yourself. And that's why I love Madame X, because that's me. I don't try to be anybody but me up on stage with Madame X.
Next track, brother, is called Monstrosity. How about some history?
All right, well, Monstrosity, you know, when we were writing the record, Madame, you know, the new record, we didn't know what was going to be the, you know, we thought, well, we're going to do another 80s rock song, will be the first song. So what's the name of the record? Oh, we were coming up with all these different names, you know, like Resurrection, you know, and then we were like, let's not get goofy now and stuff like that. So Roxy had this, and Maxine had this great tune, you know, music and stuff and words, and the song Monstrosity just seemed to be the right thing for Madame X, because when you see the record cover, you'll understand what I'm talking about, because we don't exactly look like we do normally. We have this great artist, Lexicon or something like that. He's the one who did the Iron Maiden covers and stuff. When you see this record album, you're going to be like, oh my God, it's great. We look like monster superheroes, you know, and it's just really amazing, you know, the artwork and the effort and the love we put into this record. So Monstrosity, just right from the beginning with the drums, you go, oh my God, you know, and then when the guitar kicks in, it's heavy. It's one of the heavy songs on the record. You know, it's the girls have gotten real into the heavy stuff, where I like to keep the commercial sing-along stuff, and Chris just likes breaking shit. Godzilla just likes breaking bases over his head or whatever. Right. You know, he brought 7 bases to Sweden. He came home with 2.
Good Lord.
Yeah, he broke the rest and threw them out into the crowd. It was amazing. People loved it. We had to stitch his head up at the show because he split his head open.
That's wild,
man. Maniac. He's the mayhem.
Let's go ahead, Ben, and let the listeners hear Monstrosity.
Brand new song from Madame X.
Crank it up. All go. All right, Brett, welcome back. We're going to go ahead and close it out, man. And I do want to, I do want to close it out with one more question. And it's this, my friend. What type of legacy would you like to leave to your friends, family, and fans?
Just that, me personally, I was a great entertainer. If you can make a person smile, if you can make them happy, if you can make them have fun and go home singing your songs and say, man, what a show, you know, what a great guy, you know, I mean, no matter what I do, no matter what genre of music I do, whatever, I try to involve the audience, and I love my fans and friends and people, and just that I was a genuine soul.
That's an awesome answer, my friend. And Brett, I just want to say to you, man, again, that I just truly appreciate you taking your time and doing this interview with me, man, because, you know, I've been a Madam X fan, and to have this opportunity, as I stated in the beginning, I'm truly humbled. And I want to say to you, my friend, that I wish you and the band the utmost success in all that you do. And I hope Madam X just kicks ass like they did back in the day, but 10 times harder, man. Just
well,
all the best to you, my friend.
Jim, I appreciate it. And really, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. It was an honor and a pleasure on my part. All I can say is get ready, because it's coming. And when it does, we're going to rock!
All right. Well, there it is. An interview with Brett Kaiser of Madam X. I am Jim Madonna, your host. Peace.